George R.R. Martin. Hugo, Nebula, and World Fantasy Award winner George R.R. Martin, New York Times best-selling author of the landmark A Song of Ice and Fire fantasy series, has been called the American Tolkien. Born in Bayonne, New Jersey, George R.R. Martin made his first sale in 1971 and soon established himself as one of the most popular SF writers of the 70s. He quickly became a mainstay of the Ben Bova analog with stories such as With Morning Comes Mistfall and Seven Times Never Kill Man, The Second Kind of Loneliness, The Storms of Windhaven, in collaboration with Lisa Tuttle and later expanded by them into the novel Windhaven, Override, and others, although he also sold to Amazing, Fantastic, Galaxy, Orbit, and other markets. One of his analog stories, the striking novella A Song for Leah, won him his first Hugo Award in 1974. By the end of the 70s, he had reached the height of his influence as a science fiction writer and was producing his best work in that category, with stories such as the famous Sand Kings, his best-known story which won both the Nebula and the Hugo in 1980. He'd later win another Nebula in 1985 for his story, Portraits of His Children. The Way of Cross and Dragon, which won a Hugo Award in the same year, making Martin the first author ever to receive two Hugo Awards for fiction in the same year, Bitter Blooms, The Stone City, Star Lady, and others. These stories would be collected in Sand Kings, one of the strongest collections of the period. By now, he had mostly moved away from analog, although he would have a long sequence of stories about the droll interstellar adventures of Haviland Tuff, later collected in Tuff Voyaging, running throughout the 80s in the Stanley Schmidt analog, as well as a few strong individual pieces such as the novella Night Flyers. Most of his major work of the late 70s and early 80s, though, would appear in Omni. The late 70s and 80s also saw the publication of his memorable novel, Dying of the Light, his only solo SF novel, while his stories were collected in A Song for Leah, Sand Kings, Songs of Stars and Shadows, Songs the Dead Men Sing, Night Flyers, and Portraits of His Children. By the beginning of the 80s, he'd moved away from SF and into the horror genre, publishing the big horror novel, Fevre Dream, and winning the Bram Stoker Award for his horror story, The Pear-Shaped Man, and the World Fantasy Award for his werewolf novella, The Skin Trade. By the end of that decade, though, the crash of the horror market and the commercial failure of his ambitious horror novel, The Armageddon Rag, had driven him out of the print world and to a successful career in television instead, where for more than a decade he worked as story editor or producer on such shows as The New Twilight Zone and Beauty and the Beast. After years away, Martin made a triumphant return to the print world in 1996 with the publication of the immensely successful fantasy novel A Game of Thrones, the start of his Song of Ice and Fire sequence. A freestanding novella taken from that work, Blood of the Dragon, won Martin another Hugo Award in 1997. Further books in the Song of Ice and Fire series, A Clash of Kings, A Storm of Swords, A Feast for Crows, and forthcoming A Dance with Dragons, have made it one of the most popular, acclaimed, and best-selling series in all of modern fantasy. His most recent books are a massive retrospective collection spanning the entire spectrum of his career, GRRM, a RR retrospective, a novella collection, Star Lady and Fast Friend, a novel written in collaboration with Gardner Dozois and Daniel Abraham, Hunter's Run, and as editor, three new volumes of his long-running Wild Cards anthology series, Busted Flush, Inside Straight, and Suicide Kings. Martin first introduced the base-born Hedge Knight, Sir Duncan the Tall, and his squire Egg in his novella The Hedge Knight, a finalist for the World Fantasy Award. The two characters became wildly popular and returned for further adventures in The Sworn Sword. In the vivid and hugely entertaining novella that follows, Martin takes Dunk and Egg on a further adventure as they participate in a sinister tourney where absolutely nothing is as it seems, including Dunk and Egg. The Dunk and Egg stories have recently been published in graphic novel form as The Hedge Knight and The Hedge Knight 2, Sworn Sword. The Mystery Knight, A Tale of the Seven Kingdoms. A light summer rain was falling as Dunk and Egg took their leave of Stony Sept. Dunk rode his old war horse Thunder, with Egg beside him on the spirited young palfrey he'd named Rain, leading their mule, Maester. On Maester's back were bundled Dunk's armor and Egg's books, their bedrolls, tent, and clothing, several slabs of hard salt beef, half a flagon of mead, and two skins of water. Egg's old straw hat, wide-brimmed and floppy, kept the rain off the mule's head. The boy had cut holes for Maester's ears. Egg's new straw hat was on his own head. Except for the ear holes, the two hats looked much the same to Dunk. As they neared the town gates, Egg reined up sharply. Up above the gateway, a traitor's head had been impaled upon an iron spike. It was fresh from the look of it, the flesh more pink than green, but the carrion crows had already gone to work on it. The dead man's lips and cheeks were torn and ragged. His eyes were two brown holes, weeping slow red tears as raindrops mingled with the crusted blood. The dead man's mouth sagged open, as if to harangue travelers passing through the gate below. Dunk had seen such sights before. "Back in King's Landing, when I was a boy, I stole a head right off its spike once," he told Egg. Actually, it had been Ferret who scampered up the wall to snatch the head after Rafe and Pudding said he'd never dare. But when the guards came running, he tossed it down, and Dunk was the one who'd caught it. "Some rebel lord or robber knight it was. Or maybe just a common murderer. A head's a head. They all look the same after a few days on a spike." Him and his three friends had used the head to terrorize the girls of Flea Bottom. They'd chase them through the alleys and make them give the head a kiss before they'd let them go. That head got kissed a lot, as he recalled. There wasn't a girl in King's Landing who could run as fast as Rafe. Egg was better off not hearing that part, though. "Ferret, Rafe, and Pudding. Little monsters, those three, and me the worst of all." His friends and he had kept the head until the flesh turned black and began to slough away. That took the fun out of chasing girls, so one night they burst into a pot shop and tossed what was left into the kettle. "The crows always go for the eyes," he told Egg. "Then the cheeks cave in. The flesh turns green." He squinted. "Wait. I know that face."
"You do, sir," said Egg. "3 days ago, the hunchbacked Septon we heard preaching against Lord Bloodraven."
He remembered then. He was a holy man sworn to the Seven, even if he did preach treason.
"His hands are scarlet with a brother's blood, and the blood of his young nephews, too," the hunchback had declared to the crowd that had gathered in the market square. "A shadow came at his command to strangle brave Prince Valar's sons in their mother's womb. Where is our young prince now? Where is his brother, sweet Materis? Where has good King Daeron gone? And fearless Baelor Breakspear. The grave has claimed them, every one, yet he endures, this pale bird with bloody beak who perches on King Ares' shoulder and caws into his ear. The mark of hell is on his face and in his empty eye, and he has brought us drought and pestilence and murder. Rise up, I say, and remember our true king across the water. 7 gods there are, and 7 kingdoms, and the black dragon sired 7 sons. Rise up, my lords and ladies, Rise up, you brave knights and sturdy yeomen, and cast down Blood Raven, that foul sorcerer, lest your children and your children's children be cursed forevermore. Every word was treason. Even so, it was a shock to see him here with holes where his eyes had been.
That's him, aye, Dunk said, and another good reason to put this town behind us.
He gave Thunder a touch of the spur, and he and Egg rode through the gates of Stony Sept, listening to the soft sound of the rain. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? The riddle ran. 1,000 eyes and 1. Some claimed the king's hand was a student of the dark arts who could change his face, put on the likeness of a one-eyed dog, even turn into a mist. Packs of gaunt gray wolves hunted down his foes, men said, and carrion crows spied for him and whispered secrets in his ear. Most of the tales were only tales, Dunk did not doubt, but no one could doubt that Bloodraven had informers everywhere. He had seen the man once with his own 2 eyes, back in King's Landing. White as bone were the skin and hair of Brynden Rivers, and his eye. He had only the one, the other having been lost to his half-brother Bittersteel on the Redgrass Field, was red as blood. On cheek and neck he bore the wine-stained birthmark that had given him his name. When the town was well behind them, Dunk cleared his throat and said, "Bad business, cutting off the heads of Septons. All he did was talk. Words are wind."
"Some words are wind, sir. Some are treason."
Egg was skinny as a stick, all ribs and elbows, but he did have a mouth.
"Now you sound a proper princeling."
Egg took that for an insult, which it was.
"He might have been a Septon, but he was preaching lies, sir. The drought wasn't Lord Bloodraven's fault, nor the Great Spring Sickness, either."
"Might be that so, but if we start cutting off the heads of all the fools and liars, half the towns in the Seven Kingdoms will be empty."
6 days later, the rain was just a memory. Dunk had stripped off his tunic to enjoy the warmth of sunlight on his skin. When a light breeze came up, cool and fresh and fragrant as a maiden's breath, he sighed.
"Water," he announced. "Smell it? The lake can't be far now."
"All I can smell is Maester, sir. He stinks."
Egg gave the mule's lead a savage tug. Maester had stopped to crop at the grass beside the road, as he did from time to time.
"There's an old inn by the lake shore."
Dunk had stopped there once when he was squiring for the old man.
"Sir Arlen said they brewed a fine brown ale. Might be we could have a taste while we waited for the ferry."
Egg gave him a hopeful look.
"To wash the food down, sir?"
"What food would that be?"
"A slice off the roast,"
the boy said.
"A bit of duck, a bowl of stew, whatever they have, sir."
Their last hot meal had been 3 days ago. Since then, they had been living on windfalls and strips of old salt beef as hard as wood. It would be good to put some real food in our bellies before we started north. That wall's a long way off.
"We could spend the night as well," suggested Egg.
"Does my lord want a feather bed?"
"Straw will serve me well enough, sir," said Egg, offended.
"We have no coin for beds."
"We have 22 pennies, 3 stars, 1 stag, and that old chipped garnet, sir."
Dunk scratched at his ear.
"I thought we had 2 silvers.
"We did, until you bought the tent. Now we have the 1.
"We won't have any if we start sleeping at inns. You want to share a bed with some peddler and wake up with his fleas?"
Dunk snorted.
"Not me. I have my own fleas, and they are not fond of strangers. We'll sleep beneath the stars."
"The stars are good," Egg allowed, "but the ground is hard, sir, and sometimes it's nice to have a pillow for your head."
"Pillows are for princes."
Egg was as good a squire as a knight could want, but every so often he would get to feeling princely.
The lad has dragon blood. Never forget.
Dunk had beggar's blood himself, or so they used to tell him back in Flea Bottom, when they weren't telling him that he was sure to hang.
Might be we can afford some ale and a hot supper, but I'm not wasting good coin on a bed. We need to save our pennies for the ferryman.
The last time he had crossed the lake, the ferry cost only a few coppers, but that had been 6 years ago, or maybe seven. Everything had grown more costly since then.
Well, said Egg, we could use my boot to get across.
We could, said Dunk, but we won't.
Using the boot was dangerous. Word would spread. Word always spreads. His squire was not bald by chance. Egg had the purple eyes of old Valyria and hair that shone like beaten gold and strands of silver woven together. He might as well wear a three-headed dragon as a brooch as let that hair grow out. These were perilous times in Westeros, and, well, it was best to take no chances.
Another word about your bloody boot, and I'll clout you in the ears so hard you'll fly across the lake.
I'd sooner swim, Sare.
Egg swam well, and Dunk did not. The boy turned in the saddle.
Sare, someone's coming up the road behind us. Hear the horses?
I'm not deaf.
Dunk could see their dust as well.
A large party, and in haste.
Do you think they might be outlaws, Sare?
Egg raised up in the stirrups, more eager than afraid. The boy was like that.
Outlaws would be quieter. Only lords make so much noise.
Dunk rattled his sword hilt to loosen the blade in its scabbard.
Still, we'll get off the road and let them pass. There are lords and lords.
It never hurt to be a little wary. The roads were not so safe as when good King Daron sat the Iron Throne. He and Egg concealed themselves behind a thorn bush. Dunk unslung his shield and slipped it onto his arm. It was an old thing, tall and heavy, kite-shaped, made of pine and rimmed with iron. He had bought it in Stony Sept to replace the shield the Long Inch had hacked to splinters when they fought. Dunk had not had time to have it painted with his elm and shooting star, so it still bore the arms of its last owner. A hanged man swinging grim and gray beneath a gallows tree. It was not a sigil that he would have chosen for himself, but the shield had come cheap. The first riders galloped past within moments, two young lordlings mounted on a pair of coursers. The one on the bay wore an open-faced helm of gilded steel with three tall feathered plumes, one white, one red, one gold. Matching plumes adorned his horse's crinet. The black stallion beside him was barbed in blue and gold. His trappings rippled with the wind of his passage as he thundered past. Side by side, the riders streaked on by, whooping and laughing, their long cloaks streaming behind. A third lord followed more sedately at the head of a long column. There were two dozen in the party, grooms and cooks and serving men, all to attend three knights, plus men-at-arms and mounted crossbowmen, and a dozen drays heavy laden with their armor, tents, and provisions. Slung from the lord's saddle was his shield, dark orange and charged with three black castles. Dunk knew those arms, but from where? The lord who bore them was an older man, sour-mouthed and saturnine, with a close-cropped salt-and-pepper beard. He might have been at Ashford Meadow, Dunk thought, or maybe we served at his castle when I was squiring for Sir Arlen. The old hedge knight had done service at so many different keeps and castles through the years that Dunk could not recall the half of them. The lord reined up abruptly, scowling at the thorn bush.
You, in the bush, show yourself.
Behind him, two crossbowmen slipped quarrels into the notch. The rest continued on their way. Dunk stepped through the tall grass, his shield upon his arm, his right hand resting on the pommel of his longsword. His face was a red-brown mask from the dust the horses had kicked up, and he was naked from the waist up. He looked a scruffy sight, he knew, though it was like to be the size of him that gave the other pause. "We want no quarrel, my lord. There's only the two of us, me and my squire." He beckoned Aeg forward.
"Squire, do you claim to be a knight?"
Dunk did not like the way the man was looking at him. Those eyes could flay a man. It seemed prudent to remove his hand from his sword.
"I am a hedge knight seeking service."
"Every robber knight I've ever hanged has said the same. Your device may be prophetic, sir, if sir you are. A gallows and a hanged man. These are your arms?"
"No, my lord. I need to have the shield repainted."
"Why, did you rob it off a corpse?"
"I bought it for good coin."
"Three castles, black on orange. Where have I seen those before?"
"I am no robber."
The lord's eyes were chips of flint.
"How did you come by that scar upon your cheek? A cut from a whip?"
"A dagger, though my face is none of your concern, my lord."
"I'll be the judge of what is my concern."
By then, the two younger knights had come trotting back to see what had delayed their party.
"There you are, Gormy," called the rider on the black,
a young man, lean and lithe, with a comely, clean-shaven face and fine features. Black hair fell shining to his collar. His doublet was made of dark blue silk edged in gold satin. Across his chest, an engrailed cross had been embroidered in gold thread, with a golden fiddle in the first and third quarters, a golden sword in the second and the fourth. His eyes caught the deep blue of his doublet and sparkled with amusement.
"Alan feared you'd fallen from your horse. A palpable excuse, it seems to me. I was about to leave him in my dust."
"Who are these two brigands?" asked the rider on the bay.
Aeg bristled at the insult.
"You have no call to name us brigands, my lord. When we saw your dust, we thought you might be outlaws. That's the only reason that we hid. This is Ser Duncan the Tall, and I'm his squire."
The lordlings paid no more heed to that than they would have paid the croaking of a frog.
"I believe that is the largest lout I have ever seen," declared the Knight of Three Feathers.
He had a pudgy face beneath a head of curly hair the color of dark honey.
7 feet if he's an inch, I'd wager. What a mighty crash he'll make when he comes tumbling down."
Dunk felt color rising to his face.
"You'd lose your wager," he thought.
The last time he had been measured, Aeg's brother, Aemon, pronounced him an inch shy of 7 feet.
"Is that your war horse, Ser Giant?" said the feathered lordling. "I suppose we could butcher it for the meat."
"Lord Alan oft forgets his courtesies," the black-haired knight said. "Please forgive his churlish words, sir. Alan, you will ask Ser Duncan for his pardon."
"If I must, will you forgive me, sir?"
He did not wait for a reply, but turned his bay about and trotted down the road. The other lingered.
"Are you bound for the wedding, sir?"
Something in his tone made Dunk want to tug his forelock. He resisted the impulse and said,
"We're for the ferry, my lord."
"As are we.
But the only lords hereabout are Gormy and that wastrel who just left us, Alan Cockshaw.
I am a vagabond hedge knight like yourself. Sir John the Fiddler, I am called."
That was the sort of name a hedge knight might choose. But Dunk had never seen any hedge knight garbed or armed or mounted in such splendor.
"The Knight of the Golden Hedge," he thought.
"You know my name. My squire is called Aeg."
"Well met, sir. Come ride with us to White Walls and break a few lances to help Lord Butterwell celebrate his new marriage. I'll wager you could give good account of yourself."
Dunk had not done any jousting since Ashford Meadow. "If I could win a few ransoms, we'd eat well on the ride north," he thought. But the lord with the three castles on his shield said,
"Ser Duncan needs to be about his journey, as do we."
John the Fiddler paid the older man no mind.
"I would love to cross swords with you, sir. I've tried men of many lands and races, but
but never one your size. Was your father large as well?
I never knew my father, sir.
I am sad to hear it. Mine own sire was taken from me too soon.
The fiddler turned to the Lord of the Three Castles.
We should ask Sir Duncan to join our jolly company.
We do not need his sort.
Dunk was at a loss for words. Penniless hedge knights were not oft asked to ride with highborn lords.
I would have more in common with their servants.
Judging from the length of their column, Lord Cockshaw and the fiddler had brought grooms to tend their horses, cooks to feed them, squires to clean their armor, guards to defend them. Dunk had Egg.
His sword? The fiddler laughed. What sword is that? The big sword? Look at the size of him.
We want strong men. Young swords are worth more than old names, I've oft heard it said.
By fools, you know little and less about this man. He might be a brigand, or one of Lord Bloodraven's spies.
I am no man's spy, said Dunk, and my lord has no call to speak of me as if I were deaf or dead or down in Dorn.
Those flinty eyes considered him.
Down in Dorn would be a good place for you, sir.
You have my leave to go there.
Pay him no mind, the fiddler said. He's a sour old soul. He suspects everyone.
Gormy, I have a good feeling about this fellow. Sir Duncan, will you come with us to White Walls?
My lord, I...
How could he share a camp with such as these? Their serving men would raise their pavilions, their grooms would curry their horses, their cooks would serve them each a capon or a joint of beef, whilst Dunk and Egg gnawed on strips of hard salt beef.
I couldn't.
You see, said the Lord of the Three Castles, he knows his place, and it is not with us.
He turned his horse back toward the road.
By now, Lord Cockshaw is half a league ahead.
I suppose I must chase him down again.
The fiddler gave Dunk an apologetic smile.
Perchance we'll meet again some day. I hope so. I should love to try my lance on you.
Dunk did not know what to say to that.
Good fortune in the lists, sir,
he finally managed. But by then, Sir John had wheeled about to chase the column. The older lord rode after him. Dunk was glad to see his back. He had not liked his flinty eyes, nor Lord Allen's arrogance. The fiddler had been pleasant enough, but there was something odd about him as well.
Two fiddles and two swords, a cross engrailed, he said to Egg as they watched the dust of their departure.
What house is that? None, sir. I never saw that shield in any roll of arms.
Perhaps he is a hedge knight after all. Dunk had devised his own arms at Ashford Meadow when a puppeteer called Tansel Tootall asked him what he wanted painted on his shield. Was the older lord some kin to House Frey? The Freys bore castles on their shield, and their holdings were not far from here. Egg rolled his eyes.
The Frey arms are two blue towers connected by a bridge on a gray field. Those were three castles. Black on orange, sir. Did you see a bridge?
No. He just does that to annoy me.
And next time you roll your eyes at me, I'll clout you on the ear so hard they'll roll back into your head for good.
Egg looked chastened.
I never meant...
Never mind what you meant. Just tell me who he was.
Gorman Peak, the Lord of Starpike.
That's down in the Reach, isn't it? Does he really have three castles?
Only on his shield, sir. House Peak did hold three castles once, but two of them were lost.
How do you lose two castles?
You fight for the Black Dragon, sir.
Oh.
Dunk felt stupid.
That again.
For 200 years, the realm had been ruled by the descendants of Aegon the Conqueror and his sisters, who had made the Seven Kingdoms one and forged the Iron Throne. Their royal banners bore the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen, red on black. 16 years ago, a bastard son of King Aegon IV named Daemon Blackfyre, had risen in revolt against his true-born brother. Daemon had used the three-headed dragon on his banners, too, but he reversed the colors, as many bastards did. His revolt had ended on the red grass field, where Daemon and his twin sons died beneath a rain of Lord Bloodraven's arrows. Those rebels who survived and bent the knee were pardoned, but some lost land, some titles, some gold. All gave hostages to ensure their future loyalty. Three castles, black on orange. I remember now. Ser Arlen never liked to talk about the red grass field, but once in his cups he told me how his sister's son had died. He could almost hear the old man's voice again, smell the wine upon his breath.
Roger of Pennytree, that was his name. His head was smashed in by a mace wielded by a lord with three castles on his shield.
Lord Gorman Peak. The old man never knew his name, or never wanted to. By that time, Lord Peak and John the Fiddler and their party were no more than a plume of red dust in the distance. It was 16 years ago. The Pretender died, and those who followed him were exiled or forgiven. Anyway, it has naught to do with me. For a while they rode along without talking, listening to the plaintive cries of birds. Half a league on, Dunk cleared his throat and said, "Butterwell," he said. "His lands are near?"
"On the far side of the lake, sir. Lord Butterwell was the master of coin when King Aegon sat the Iron Throne. King Daron made him hand, but not for long. His arms are undy green and white and yellow, sir."
Aeg loved showing off his heraldry.
"Is he a friend of your father?"
Aeg made a face.
"My father never liked him. In the rebellion, Lord Butterwell's second son fought for the Pretender and his eldest for the king. That way he was certain to be on the winning side. Lord Butterwell didn't fight for anyone."
"Some might call that prudent."
"My father calls it craven."
"Aye, he would. Prince Maekar was a hard man, proud and full of scorn.
We have to go by White Walls to reach the King's Road. Why not fill our bellies?"
Just the thought was enough to cause his guts to rumble.
"Might be that one of the wedding guests will need an escort back to his own seat."
"You said that we were going north."
"The wall has stood 8,000 years. It will last a while longer. It's 1,000 leagues from here to there, and we could do with some more silver in our purse."
Dunk was picturing himself atop Thunder, riding down that sour-faced old lord with the three castles on his shield. That would be sweet.
"It was old Ser Arlen's squire who defeated you, I could tell him, when he came to ransom back his arms and armor. The boy who replaced the boy you killed."
The old man would like that.
"You're not thinking of entering the lists, are you, Ser?"
"Might be it's time."
"It's not, Ser."
"Maybe it's time I gave you a good clout in the ear."
"I'd only need to win 2 tilts. If I could collect 2 ransoms and pay out only one, we'd eat like kings for a year."
"If there was a melee, I might enter that."
Dunk's size and strength would serve him better in a melee than in the lists.
"It's not customary to have a melee at a marriage, sir."
"It's customary to have a feast, though. We have a long way to go. Why not set out with our bellies full for once?"
The sun was low in the west by the time they saw the lake, its waters glimmering red and gold, bright as a sheet of beaten copper. When they glimpsed the turrets of the inn above some willows, Dunk donned his sweaty tunic once again and stopped to splash some water on his face. He washed off the dust of the road as best he could and ran wet fingers through his thick mop of sun-streaked hair. There was nothing to be done for his size or the scar that marked his cheek, but he wanted to make himself appear somewhat less the wild robber knight. The inn was bigger than he'd expected, a great gray sprawl of a place, timbered and turreted, half of it built on pilings out over the water. A row of rough-cut planks had been laid down over the muddy lake shore to the ferry landing, but neither the fairy nor the ferryman were in evidence. Across the road stood a stable with a thatched roof. A dry stone wall enclosed the yard, but the gate was open. Within, they found a well and a watering trough.
"See to the animals," Dunk told Egg, "but see that they don't drink too much. I'll ask about some food."
He found the innkeeper sweeping off the steps.
"Are you come for the fairy?" the woman asked him. "You're too late. The sun's going down, and Ned don't like to cross by night unless the moon is full. He'll be back first thing in the morning."
"Do you know how much he asks?"
3 pennies for each of you and 10 for your horses."
"We have 2 horses and a mule."
"It's 10 for mules as well."
Dunk did the sums in his head and came up with 6 and 30, more than he had hoped to spend. "Last time I came this way, it was only 2 pennies and 6 for horses."
"Take that up with Ned. It's not to me. If you're looking for a bed, I've none to offer. Lord Shawnee and Lord Costain brought their retinues. I'm full to bursting."
"Is Lord Peake here as well?" "He killed Ser Arlen's squire."
"He was with Lord Cockshaw and John the Fiddler."
"Ned took them across on his last run."
She looked Dunk up and down.
"Were you part of their company?"
"We met them on the road is all."
A good smell was drifting out of the windows of the inn, one that made Dunk's mouth water.
"We might like some of what you're roasting if it's not too costly."
"It's wild boar," the woman said, "well peppered and served with onions, mushrooms, and mashed neeps."
"We could do without the neeps. Some slices off the boar and a tankard of your good brown ale would do for us. How much would you ask for that? And maybe we could have a place on your stable floor to bed down for the night."
That was a mistake.
"The stables are for horses. That's why we call them stables. You're big as a horse, I'll grant you, but I see only 2 legs.
She swept her broom at him to shoo him off.
"I can't be expected to feed all the 7 kingdoms. The boar is for my guests. So is my ale. I won't have lords saying that I run short of food or drink before they were surfeit. The lake is full of fish, and you'll find some other rogues camped down by the stumps. Hedge knights, if you believe them."
Her tone made it quite clear that she did not.
"Might be they'd have food to share. It's not to me. Away with you now, I've work to do."
The door closed with a solid thump behind her, before Dunk could even think to ask where he might find these stumps. He found Egg sitting on the horse trough, soaking his feet in the water and fanning his face with his big floppy hat.
"Are they roasting pigs, Sare? I smell pork."
"Wild boar," said Dunk in a glum tone. "But who wants boar when we have good salt beef?"
Egg made a face.
"Can I please eat my boots instead, Sare? I'll make a new pair out of the salt beef. It's tougher."
"No," Dunk said, trying not to smile. "You can't eat your boots. One more word and you'll eat my fist, though. Get your feet out of that trough."
He found his great helm on the mule and slung it underhand at Egg.
"Draw some water from the well and soak the beef."
Unless you've soaked it for a good long time, the salt beef was like to break your teeth. It tasted best when soaked in ale, but water would serve.
"Don't use the trough, either. I don't care to taste your feet."
"My feet could only improve the taste, Sare,"
Egg said, wriggling his toes. But he did as he was bid. The hedge knights did not prove hard to find. Egg spied their fire flickering in the woods along the lakeshore, so they made for it, leading the animals behind them. The boy carried Dunk's helm beneath one arm, sloshing with each step he took. By then, the sun was a red memory in the west. Before long, the trees opened up, and they found themselves in what must once have been a weirwood grove. Only a ring of white stumps and a tangle of bone-pale roots remained to show where the trees had stood, when the children of the forest ruled in Westeros. Among the weirwood stumps, they found two men squatting near a cook fire, passing a skin of wine from hand to hand. Their horses were cropping at the grass beyond the grove, and they had stacked their arms and armor in neat piles. A much younger man sat apart from the other two, his back against a chestnut tree.
"Well met, sirs," Dunk called out in a cheerful voice.
It was never wise to take armed men unawares.
"I am called Sir Duncan the Tall. The lad is Egg. May we share your fire?"
A stout man of middling years rose to greet them, garbed in tattered finery. Flamboyant ginger whiskers framed his face.
"Well met, Sir Duncan. You are a large one, and most welcome, certainly, as is your lad. Egg, was it? What sort of name is that, pray?"
"A short one, sir."
Egg knew better than to admit that Egg was short for Aegon, not to men he did not know.
"Indeed! What happened to your hair?"
"Rootworms," Dunk thought. "Tell him it was rootworms, boy." That was the safest story, the tale they told most often, though sometimes Egg took it in his head to play some childish game.
"I shaved it off, sir. I mean to stay shaven until I earn my spurs."
"A noble vow. I am Sir Kyle, the cat of Misty Moor. Under yonder chestnut sits Sir Glendon, Ball. And here you have the good Sir Maynard Plum."
Egg's ears pricked up at that name.
"Plum? Are you kin to Lord Viserys Plum, sir?"
"Distantly,"
confessed Sir Maynard, a tall, thin, stoop-shouldered man with long, straight flaxen hair,
"though I doubt that his lordship would admit to it. One might say that he is of the sweet plums, whilst I am of the sour."
Plum's cloak was as purple as name, though frayed about the edges and badly dyed. A moonstone brooch big as a hen's egg fastened it at the shoulder. Elsewise, he wore dun-colored rough-spun and stained brown leather.
"We have salt beef," said Dunk.
"Sir Maynard has a bag of apples," said Kyle the Cat, "and I have pickled eggs and onions. Why, together we have the makings of a feast. Be seated, sir. We have a fine choice of stumps for your comfort. We will be here until mid-morning, unless I miss my guess. There is only the one ferry, and it is not big enough to take us all. The lords and their tails must cross first."
"Help me with the horses," Dunk told Egg. Together, the two of them unsaddled Thunder, Rain, and Maester. Only when the animals had been fed and watered and hobbled for the night did Dunk accept the wineskin that Sir Maynard offered him.
"Even sour wine is better than none," said Kyle the Cat. "We'll drink finer vintages at White Walls. Lord Butterwell is said to have the best wines north of the Arbor. He was once the king's hand, as his father's father was before him, and he is said to be a pious man besides, and very rich."
"His wealth is all from cows," said Maynard Plum. "He ought to take a swollen udder for his arms. These Butterwells have milk running in their veins, and the Freys are no better. This will be a marriage of cattle thieves and toll collectors, one lot of coin clinkers joining with another. When the Black Dragon rose, this lord of cows sent one son to Daemon and one to Daeron to make certain there was a Butterwell on the winning side. Both perished on the red grass field, and his youngest died in the spring. That's why he's making this new marriage. Unless this new wife gives him a son, Butterwell's name will die with him."
"As it should." Sir Glendon Ball gave his sword another stroke with the whetstone.
"The warrior hates cravens."
The scorn in his voice made Dunk give the youth a closer look. Sir Glendon's clothes were of good cloth, but well-worn and ill-matched, with the look of hand-me-downs. Tufts of dark brown hair stuck out from beneath his iron half-helm. The lad himself was short and chunky, with small, close-set eyes, thick shoulders, and muscular arms. His eyebrows were shaggy as two caterpillars after a wet spring. his nose bulbous, his chin pugnacious. And he was young. 16 might be. No more than 18. Dunk might have taken him for a squire if Sir Kyle had not named him with a sare. The lad had pimples on his cheeks in place of whiskers. "How long have you been a knight?" Dunk asked him.
"Long enough. Half a year when the moon turns. I was knighted by Sir Morgan Dunstable of Tumbler's Falls. 2 dozen people saw it. But I have been training for knighthood since I was born. I rode before I walked, and knocked a grown man's tooth out of his head before I lost any of my own. I mean to make my name at White Walls and claim the Dragon's Egg."
"The Dragon's Egg? Is that the champion's prize, truly?"
"The last dragon had perished half a century ago. Sir Arlen had once seen a clutch of her eggs, though.
They were hard as stone, he said, but beautiful to look upon," the old man had told Dunk. "How could Lord Butterwell come by a dragon's egg?"
"King Aegon presented the egg to his father's father after guesting for a night in his old castle," said Sir Maynard Plum.
"Was it a reward for some act of valor?" asked Dunk.
Sir Kyle chuckled.
"Some might call it that. Supposedly old Lord Butterwell had 3 young maiden daughters when his grace came calling. By morning all 3 had royal bastards in their little bellies. A hot night's work, that was."
Dunk had heard such talk before. Aegon the Unworthy had bedded half the maidens in the realm and fathered bastards on the lot of them, supposedly. Worse, the old king had legitimized them all upon his deathbed. The base-born ones, born of tavern wenches, whores, and shepherd girls, and the great bastards, whose mothers had been high-born.
"We'd all be bastard sons of old King Aegon if half these tales were true."
"And who's to say we're not?" Sir Maynard quipped.
"You ought to come with us to White Walls, Sir Duncan," urged Sir Kyle. "Your size is sure to catch some lordling's eye. You might find good service there. I know I shall. Joffrey Caswell will be at this wedding, the Lord of Bitterbridge. When he was 3, I made him his first sword. I carved it out of pine to fit his hand. In my greener days, my sword was sworn to his father."
"Was that one carved from pine as well?" Sir Maynard asked.
Kyle the Cat had the grace to laugh.
"That sword was good steel, I assure you. I should be glad to ply it once again in the service of the centaur. Sir Duncan, even if you do not choose to tilt, do join us for the wedding feast. There will be singers and musicians, jugglers and tumblers, and a troop of comic dwarfs."
Dunk frowned. "Egg and I have a long journey before us. We are headed north to Winterfell. Lord Baron Stark is gathering swords to drive the Krakens from his shores for good."
"Too cold up there for me," said Sir Maynard. "If you want to kill Krakens, go west. The Lannisters are building ships to strike back at the Iron Men on their home islands. That's how you put an end to Dagon Greyjoy. Fighting him on land is fruitless. He just slips back to sea. You have to beat him on the water."
That had the ring of truth, but the prospect of fighting Iron Men at sea was not one that Dunk relished. He'd had a taste of that on the White Lady, sailing from Dorne to Old Town, when he'd donned his armor to help the crew repel some raiders. The battle had been desperate and bloody, and once he'd almost fallen in the water. That would have been the end of him.
"The throne should take a lesson from Stark and Lannister," declared Sir Kyle the Cat. "At least they fight. What do the Targaryens do? King Aerys hides among his books. Prince Rhaegal prances naked through the Red Keep's halls, and Prince Maekar broods at Summerhall."
Egg was prodding at the fire with a stick to send sparks floating up into the night. Dunk was pleased to see him ignoring the mention of his father's name. Perhaps he's finally learned to hold that tongue of his.
"Myself, I blame Bloodraven," Sir Kyle went on. "He is the king's hand, yet he does nothing, whilst the Krakens spread flame and terror up and down the sunset sea."
Sir Maynard gave a shrug.
His eye is fixed on Tyrosh, where Bittersteel sits in exile, plotting with the sons of Daemon Blackfyre, so he keeps the king's ships close at hand lest they attempt to cross.
Aye, that may well be, Ser Kyle said, but many would welcome the return of Bittersteel. Bloodraven is the root of all our woes, the white worm gnawing at the heart of the realm.
Dunk frowned, remembering the hunchbacked Septon at Stony Sept.
Words like that can cost a man his head. Some might say you're talking treason.
How can the truth be treason?
Asked Kyle the Cat.
In King Daeron's day, a man did not have to fear to speak his mind. But now?
He made a rude noise.
Bloodraven put King Ares on the Iron Throne, but for how long?
Ares is weak, and when he dies, it will be bloody war between Lord Rivers and Prince Makar for the crown, the hand against the heir.
You have forgotten Prince Rhaegal, my friend,
Ser Maynard objected in a mild tone.
He comes next in line to Ares, not Makar, and his children after him.
Rhaegal is feeble-minded. Why, I bear him no ill will, but the man is good as dead, and those twins of his as well, though whether they will die of Makar's mace or Bloodraven's spells.
Seven save us, Dunk thought as Egg spoke up, shrill and loud.
Prince Makar is Prince Rhaegal's brother. He loves him well. He'd never do harm to him or his.
Be quiet, boy. Dunk growled at him. These knights want none of your opinions.
I can talk if I want.
No, said Dunk. You can't.
That mouth of yours will get you killed someday, and me as well, most like.
That salt beef's soaked long enough, I think. A strip for all our friends, and be quick about it.
Egg flushed, and for half a heartbeat, Dunk feared the boy might talk back. Instead, he settled for a sullen look, seething as only a boy of 11 years can seethe.
Aye, Ser, he said, fishing in the bottom of Dunk's helm.
His shaven head shone redly in the firelight as he passed out the salt beef. Dunk took his piece and worried at it. The soak had turned the meat from wood to leather, but that was all. He sucked on one corner, tasting the salt and trying not to think about the roast boar at the inn, crackling on its spit and dripping fat. As dusk deepened, flies and stinging midges came swarming off the lake. The flies preferred to plague their horses, but the midges had a taste for man flesh. The only way to keep from being bitten was to sit close to the fire, breathing smoke.
Cook or be devoured, Dunk thought glumly. Now there's a beggar's choice.
He scratched at his arms and edged closer to the fire. The wineskin soon came round again. The wine was sour and strong. Dunk drank deep and passed along the skin, whilst the Cat of Misty Moor began to talk of how he had saved the life of the Lord of Bitterbridge during the Blackfyre Rebellion.
When Lord Armand's banner-bearer fell, I leapt down from my horse with traitors all around us.
Ser, said Glendon Ball, who were these traitors?
The Blackfyre men, I meant.
Firelight glimmered off the steel in Ser Glendon's hand. The pockmarks on his face flamed as red as open sores, and his every sinew was wound as tight as a crossbow.
My father fought for the Black Dragon.
This again, Dunk snorted. Red or black was not a thing you asked a man. It always made for trouble.
I am sure Ser Kyle meant no insult to your father.
None, Ser Kyle agreed. It's an old tale, the Red Dragon and the Black. No sense for us to fight about it now, lad. We are all brothers of the hedges here.
Ser Glendon seemed to weigh the cat's words to see if he was being mocked.
Daemon Blackfyre was no traitor. The old king gave him the sword. He saw the worthiness in Daemon, even though he was born bastard. Why else would he put Blackfyre into his hand in place of Daeron's? He meant for him to have the kingdom, too. Daemon was the better man.
A hush fell. Dunk could hear the soft crackle of the fire. He could feel midges crawling on the back of his neck. He slapped at them, watching Egg, willing him to be still.
"I was just a boy when they fought the red grass field," he said, when it seemed that no one else would speak. "But I squired for a knight who fought with the red dragon, and later served another who fought for the black. There were brave men on both sides."
"Brave men," echoed Kyle the Cat a bit feebly. "Heroes." Glendon Ball turned his shield about so all of them could see the sigil painted there, a fireball blazing red and yellow across a night-black field. "I come from heroes' blood."
"Your fireball's son," Egg said.
That was the first time they saw Ser Glendon smile. Ser Kyle the Cat studied the boy closely.
"How can that be? How old are you?"
"Quentin Ball died before I was born," Ser Glendon finished. "But in me he lives again." He slammed his sword back into its scabbard. "I'll show you all at White Walls when I claim the dragon's egg." The next day proved the truth of Ser Kyle's prophecy. Ned's ferry was no wise large enough to accommodate all those who wished to cross, so Lords Costain and Shawnee must go first with their tails. That required several trips, each taking more than an hour. There were the mudflats to contend with, horses and wagons to be gotten down the planks, loaded on the boat, and unloaded again across the lake. The two lords slowed matters even further when they got into a shouting match over precedence. Shawnee was the elder, but Costain held himself to be better born. There was naught that Dunk could do but wait and swelter.
"We could go first if you let me use my boot," Egg said.
"We could," Dunk answered, "but we won't. Lord Costain and Lord Shawnee were here before us. Besides, they're lords."
Egg made a face.
"Rebel lords."
Dunk frowned down at him.
"What do you mean?"
"They were for the Black Dragon. Well, Lord Shawnee was, and Lord Costain's father. Aemon and I used to fight the battle on Maester Meliquin's green table with painted soldiers and little banners. Costain's arms quarter a silver chalice on black with a black rose on gold. That banner was on the left of Daemon's host. Shawnee was with Bittersteel on the right and almost died of his wounds."
"Old dead history. They're here now, aren't they? So they bent the knee and King Daeron gave them pardon."
"Yes, but..."
Dunk pinched the boy's lips shut.
"Hold your tongue."
Egg held his tongue. No sooner had the last boatload of Shawnee men pushed off than Lord and Lady Smallwood turned up at the landing with their own tale. So they must needs wait again. The Fellowship of the Hedge had not survived the night, it was plain to see. Ser Glendon kept his own company, prickly and sullen. Kyle the Cat judged that it would be midday before they were allowed to board the ferry, so he detached himself from the others to try to ingratiate himself with Lord Smallwood, with whom he had some slight acquaintance. Ser Maynard spent his time gossiping with the innkeep.
"Stay well away from that one," Dunk warned Egg.
There was something about Plum that troubled him.
He could be a robber knight, for all we know.
The warning only seemed to make Ser Maynard more interesting to Egg.
"I never knew a robber knight. Do you think he means to rob the dragon's egg?"
"Lord Butterwell will have the egg well guarded, I'm sure."
Dunk scratched the midge bites on his neck.
"Do you think he might display it at the feast? I'd like to get a look at one."
"I'd show you mine, Ser, but it's at Summer Hall."
"Yours? Your dragon's egg?"
Dunk frowned down at the boy, wondering if this was some jape.
"Where did it come from?"
"From a dragon, Ser. They put it in my cradle."
"Do you want a clout in the ear? There are no dragons."
"No, but there are eggs. The last dragon left a clutch of 5, and they have more on Dragonstone, old ones from before the dance. My brothers all have them, too. Arion's looks as though it's made of gold and silver, with veins of fire running through it. Mine is white and green, all swirly.
Your dragon's egg. They put it in his cradle.
Dunk was so used to Egg that sometimes he forgot Aegon was a prince.
Of course they'd put a dragon egg inside his cradle. Well, see that you don't go mentioning this egg where anyone is like to hear.
I'm not stupid, Ser. Egg lowered his voice. Someday the dragons will return. My brother Daeron's dreamed of it, and King Ares read it in a prophecy. Maybe it will be my egg that hatches. That would be splendid.
Would it?
Dunk had his doubts.
Not Egg.
Aemon and I used to pretend that our eggs would be the ones to hatch. If they did, we could fly through the sky on dragonback like the first Aegon and his sisters.
Aye, and if all the other knights in the realm should die, I'd be the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. If these eggs are so bloody precious, why is Lord Butterwell giving his away?
To show the realm how rich he is?
I suppose.
Dunk scratched his neck again and glanced over at Ser Glendon Ball, who was tightening the cinches on his saddle as he waited for the ferry.
That horse will never serve.
Ser Glendon's mount was a sway-backed stot, undersized and old.
What do you know about his sire? Why did they call him Fireball?
For his hot head and red hair. Ser Quentin Ball was the master-at-arms at the Red Keep. He taught my father and my uncles how to fight. The great bastards, too. King Aegon promised to raise him to the King's Guard, so Fireball made his wife join the Silent Sisters. Only by the time a place came open, King Aegon was dead and King Daeron named Ser William Wilde instead. My father says that it was Fireball as much as Bittersteel who convinced Daemon Blackfyre to claim the crown, and rescued him when Daeron sent the Kingsguard to arrest him. Later on, Fireball killed Lord Lefford at the gates of Lannisport and sent the Grey Lion running back to hide inside the rock. At the crossing of the Mander, he cut down the sons of Lady Penrose one by one. They say he spared the life of the youngest one as a kindness to his mother.
That was chivalrous of him, Dunk had to admit. Did Ser Quentin die upon the red grass field?
Before, Ser, Egg replied. An archer put an arrow through his throat as he dismounted by a stream to have a drink. Just some common man, no one knows who.
Those common men can be dangerous when they get it in their heads to start slaying lords and heroes.
Dunk saw the ferry creeping slowly across the lake.
Here it comes.
It's slow. Are we going to go to Whitewall, Ser?
Why not? I want to see this dragon's egg.
Dunk smiled.
If I win the tourney, we'd both have dragon's eggs.
Egg gave him a doubtful look.
What? Why are you looking at me that way?
I could tell you, Ser, the boy said solemnly, but I need to learn to hold my tongue.
They seated the hedge knights well below the salt, closer to the doors than to the dais. White Walls was almost new, as castles went, having been raised a mere 40 years ago by the grandsire of its present lord. The small folk hereabouts called it the Milk House, for its walls and keeps and towers were made of finely